The camp was already in chaos, as elephants were being led or ridden all over the place. Men were pulling down the ivory tusk support posts of their sand tents. The things were coming down everywhere he looked.
Roxxon! Roxxon!
A voice screamed down from a passing elephant that came to a lurching stop just yards away from him. Its huge saucer eyes panicked and blinked. It was Rahala, sitting atop his war bull in full battle garb.
What the hell is going on?
It's Kilok, or at least some of his men. That's what happens when they attack. The smashing rocks create these huge dust storms. One of Tutankhamun's advanced units, a party of 20 men on war bulls, went out early this morning to check the far-off sounds. Two made it back, barely, with their lives. They say the Kilok war party is headed right this way. We have less than half an hour, maybe way less. They can move fast on horseback. The men are breaking down all the tents. They'll be out of here fast. Now I'm heading out with an attack force of 50 war bulls with full battle platform contingents to try to divert the Kilok force. Slow them down long enough for the army to escape. You can travel with Tutankhamun, and I'll meet you—
The hell you will, I'm coming with you. I didn't come all this way to fly out of here with the old ladies, the pots and the pans. Where's Kral?
He's still in the pens. They're gathering them all to move them out en masse.
Rahala seemed to debate internally as he bit his lip hard and then nodded to Roxxon.
Get on. We'll have to move. The diversion force is gathering at the north end of camp. They're moving out in 5 minutes.
Right. Neferte, I'll be seeing you.
Rock turned and kissed Neferte hard. She looked angry at him. But the thundering sound from the north shook the entire camp. Her fear took over, and she ran off toward the women and children. They were mounting up on large pack elephants loaded down with all kinds of gear. Rock had seen others mount up on the elephants without having them kneel, instead leaping up onto the tusks and then up to the neck and back. He imitated the motion without grabbing hold of the great bull elephant's ears.
Excellent, Rock!
Well, I was bound to figure it out eventually.
Come, we have no time to waste.
Rahala prodded the animal on the side with his guide stick, and it turned on a dime and headed back the other way to fetch Kral.
There's Kral. Pull up alongside him.
Are you sure, Rock?
Absolutely. There's no time left.
All right, we're about 2 yards away. Let me just back up a bit to get you closer.
No need. Here! Yeah.
Kral suddenly felt the weight of the man on his back and looked around to see Roxxon getting himself seated on the small saddle over the creature's neck. The animal was clearly used to Rock already, for it didn't protest or even look at him funny.
Let's move! If we're going to join up with the diversion team, we'll have to make time!
Let's go then! Yeah!
If there was a better time for Kral to follow orders, Rock couldn't think of it. The beast immediately started running, and running fast. He seemed to want to be guided tonight, to want to know that someone, even an ear puller, knew what the hell was going on with all the thunder cracking in his ears. They tore through the center of camp, heading in the opposite direction from where most of the people and other animals were heading. Rock thought he saw Archer riding astride one of the beasts, along with a half dozen other fighters, but only for a second. It was too dusty with all the commotion to see clearly. When they were out of the camp and about a quarter mile ahead, he could see the brunt of the attack force already tearing out ahead of them, heading straight into the dust maelstrom to the north. Rahala leaned forward and continued to kick at the beast's neck, and the animal shot ahead. Roxxon followed suit, speeding up their great driving legs so that they created their own mini-thunder, slamming against the desert. They caught up with the rest of the force, which was literally galloping across the desert. Rahala's and Roxxon's war bulls were clearly among the fastest, but they pulled even with the herd soon, and then moved up alongside it to the lead. Tutankhamun's son, Ramses, was leading the charge. Rock and Rahala joined the younger man now. Their three elephants synchronized their pace. They were moving at virtually identical speeds. Ramses raised his fighting spear high in salute to the two men's arrival. It didn't take them long to reach the outer edges of the destruction that was being carried out. A cloud of dust suddenly enveloped them, and it was hard to see all that well, as if they were in a sandstorm. But as they came up over a high dune and reached the plateau, they could suddenly see for miles ahead. See the charnel grounds of death and total destruction. They could see the great pounding rocks, from the size of trucks to the size of buildings, rising up and coming down again and again like the boots of the gods, pounding the world into submission. What the hell could you do to fight that? The Northern Army Elephant Force pulled to a halt just at the edge of the other side of the dunes, which led down into the lush lower lands. The pounding rocks were now about 5 miles off and coming in fast, straight toward them. Ramses raised his royal baton and pointed to different sides, and the elephant force divided up into two groups, each 20 elephants strong. They formed up into a wedge-shaped force and suddenly went tearing down the long decline right into the storming hell.
Point with the guide stick at what you want the elephant to fire at!
Roxen reached around and grabbed hold of the long, elaborately carved guide stick and watched as Rahala and Ramses began the process to fire. They did so by catching their elephant's attention, then reaching down and aiming their guide sticks along the trunks so the elephants could see them. Rock wasn't even sure they could reach that far, but as the other war bulls opened up, he saw that the laser light beams held an absolutely straight path all the way to their targets, not wavering a millimeter. Still, the sheer mass of the immense boulders and rocks ripped right out of the earth made even the laser weapons, which had previously seemed completely awesome to Rock, now appear almost like pea shooters. Rock's bull tore ass alongside Rahala's and Ramses' mounts, all three elephants raising their trunks, firing, and then firing again. Between the dust of the stampeding attack force and the dust that came ever closer from the anti-grav boulder mass, the whole world became hard to see. The worst of it was that even when they managed to destroy one of the smashing rocks, they really hadn't hurt the controllers of the levitation sticks, who all rode on camels a mile or so behind, according to Rahala. Out of the swirling cacophony of dust and light, a building-sized chunk of debris came flying right at them.
Rock! Move!
Rock and Rahala were just outside the impact point, but Ramses was not. Roxen had seen them disappear beneath the crushing avalanches of rock and didn't hear even one scream.
This way! This way!
Without a second thought, Roxen turned and followed Rahala. The two men rode hell-bent for leather as their charging bulls let loose with everything in them. All around them, the mountains of looming death came down, smashing, grinding the men and elephants who dared attack them. Just for a second, Roxen saw through the curtains of sand about a half a mile off. He just barely managed to see the handlers of the Qual devices riding atop their camels, their hands held high, pointing the death-dealing sticks upward to hold the attacking mountains aloft. Then the dust closed again, and a boulder the size of a small truck came down just yards to the right of Roxen, sending up a mini geyser of earth.
Shit! Move!
But the great beast didn't need any prodding on that account. It was feeling its own brand of fear, an emotion that it hadn't much experience with either. The falling mountains grew even closer, smashing down on every side of them, making thunderous sounds that seemed as if they would crack their very eardrums. Rock had no idea how they weren't crushed. So many of the things seemed to be landing only feet away. But though the crushing mountains were perhaps the deadliest weapon next to the atomic bomb ever invented, the handlers of the levitation stones, riding far behind the damage they were causing, perhaps couldn't see exactly what it was they were crushing. Accuracy was not at a premium, but then it didn't have to be. And then, luck. A thick fog bank rolled in right over the top of the desert sands. And within seconds, the two elephants were lost inside, invisible to the outside world. Rahala's elephant slowed automatically once it was a few hundred feet inside. Kral came up right behind him and grabbed his tail so they wouldn't get lost, a result of the training that the creatures had undergone over the years. They slid off sideways through the fog along a set of dunes. The Amon weapons handlers didn't need to see much to guide their weapons, but they needed some sighting of targets every mile or so. As the rocks drove up and down, the two men shot away from the action. the moving mountains didn't follow. They were heading off due southeast, toward the Nile. Roxen leaned far forward, so his chest was lying atop the neck of the war beast. He could feel the animal below him, feel its power as the great dark legs churned through the sands like an ocean liner's propellers through the sea. They seemed to go through the thick, soupy mist for an hour after the great booms had disappeared miles off. The crazy bastards under Kilov's command didn't seem to have any particular strategy for conquering the countryside. Just kill everything. Let the devil sort it all out later. You couldn't surrender or even agree to be on his side if he wasn't interested. Just a madman uprooting his Earth Garden's human weeds with ruthless, mortal blows. At last, they emerged from the fog and could see the desert ahead for miles. Rahala led them on, heading due south now. Roxen hadn't the foggiest idea where he was. Doubtless, both elephants had more sense of location than he did right now. They meandered for another half hour or so through increasingly complex interwoven patterns of dunes, like a veritable maze of sand, then reached a vast and chasmed plain, at the start of which the earth sank down nearly 1,000 feet with sharp jutting rock formations and caves everywhere. As if he were seeing traffic signs, Rahala just kept his beast going, threading his way right through each crevasse and chasm. Suddenly, as they rounded a bend, 10 lasers were aimed right at them from trunks of 10 war elephants standing side by side. Not a sight one wanted to come on unprepared. But the handlers above recognized their own and opened their ranks, staring at the two silently as it was not their rank to question.
Come, follow us to our new home.
The two men followed the herd inside to a large grotto-like formation with stalagmites and stalactites hanging everywhere, like ice cream cones of calcium deposits. Elephants, fighters, and their wives and children were everywhere within the immense cavern, trying to set up their tents again in much more crowded circumstances. These were the ones so many were sacrificed to protect. Roxen looked anxiously around for more of his men. Kral headed down the middle of a corridor that was kept cleared of man or beast to facilitate movement. This was truly a nomadic army. They had pulled up stakes and were setting them back down again in the space of several hours. Homes, cooking tents, hospitals, all sprang right up, ready for function. Roxen was relieved when he spotted Chen and Archer holding up Sharansky.
Hey, look! It's Rock!
Rock!
We'd heard about an hour ago how the battle went. A single war elephant returned with its wounded rider. We heard that the entire diversionary force had been wiped out.
Yeah, we made it. But all the other poor bastards with us got it. It was the worst thing I've seen in a long time, boys. And that's no lie. Wiped out in a stone massacre. We couldn't do a goddamn thing.
Roxen, we must meet with General Tutankhamen and his top staff. We must organize a new way to respond to the Skull's army.
Right. Gotta go, guys. Good to see you all alive. This whole thing could have gotten a lot worse. You all need anything?
No, we're fine, Rock. Go ahead.
Roxen turned and rode, following Rahala's war beast. The Pharaoh and his top men were already seated around on elephant footstools in a circle. 10 of them, all giving advice to Tutankhamen, who listened to each man and then told the next to have a say. Rock and Rahala's mounts lowered themselves next to the other elephants of the top military leadership. With feed bags strapped on, the elephants were ready to stand there all night, just chewing. Rahala saluted the Pharaoh with a 3 fingers toward the side of the chin gesture, and Tutankhamen returned it, welcoming them both warmly.
Your Excellency, I must regretfully inform you that your son is dead.
The Pharaoh's whole face seemed to go slack for a second, and he aged about 30 years in that second. But then he pulled his grief back inside him, and his face hardened back to its typical regal demeanor filled with command. Rock sat patiently as they all had their say. Rahala was next to Rock and translated the bizarre combination of clicks and consonants. Basically, they wanted to fight, to go back and get revenge for those who were slain. They agreed that it was not for desert warriors to run like old women, not like war elephants to show their tails instead of their tusks.
What do you two think?
I say your men are great fighters, among the bravest I have ever seen. But we have seen the weapons these men wield, and they are truly powerful beyond imagining. I am afraid that to counterattack without an effective new plan would be tantamount to suicide. For our present configuration of forces, I believe that he is, I am sorry to say, unstoppable. There must be another way.
And what do you suggest is that other way?
I do not know right now, but it is a foolish man who throws himself and all that he loves off the cliff instead of finding a way down it.
That is true. And you, Roxanne?
We need a trick. A way in the back door, something to neutralize the damn weapons.
One of the men who had been seated around the circle stood up. Rock could see he had a sharp, angular face. He looked to be 80, perhaps 90 years old, with shrunken-in cheeks and a nose that a hawk could have loved.
He's the power man, Sesostris, the medicine man.
I learned secrets as a child. Secrets passed down from my father, who was one of the gravekeepers of the Cheops pyramids. There is a second level below the level where the Kual sticks were found by the cult of Amun years ago. A level containing the counterforce to the antimatter devices. The Ra sticks are the negatives of the Kual that Colonel Kilov is using. And it is said that there is a way into the pyramid that few know of. The Ra sticks exist. I know they do. The Pharaohs were given the Kual, it is said, by the Cat God to build the pyramids. This must be true, for those immense slabs of rock would not have been lifted by mortal men. They were raised, floated over the land. All of the ancient structures were built that way. But the gods made the raw sticks so that if mankind got out of hand with the Kual, there would be something that could destroy them. These are things that I have not revealed since I heard them as a child.
And with that, the shaky old man sat down heavily.
I say let's check out the damn things before we have any more battles. We'll get a small force together and go to the pyramids. Are they far?
The Cheops pyramids, no. Not more than a day by elephant. I think Sesostris' knowledge has come in handy.
I agree.
We can only take 3 men. No more can be taken inside the tomb entrance, or they will be subject to Amun's wrath. Yea, the legends that speak of the Ra sticks mention only 3.
Rahala looked at Rock, and they both knew the 2 who were going. Them. Sesostris smiled, his lips looking as if they would crack.
And you will need me along. Only I know the secret way inside.
For an old man, the Egyptian witchman Sesostris rode his war bull like a rodeo vet out for the winning trophy. He had insisted that no one other than himself had the slightest chance of finding the passage in, or of knowing how to deal with the raw crystals. His elephant seemed as old as he was, all wrinkled with flaps of skin hanging down everywhere. The damn thing made Krull seem like a positive teenager. They went over smooth fields of sand, miles long, then rolling slopes like waves across a pond. At last, after about 6 hours of riding hard, with only 2 quick oasis rest stops for the elephants to water, they came to a very high dune. They climbed to its summit, and as they started down, Roxanne could see, just barely, a series of tall obelisks set hundreds of feet apart, forming a monumental roadway to the Great Pyramid of Cheops. And that Great Pyramid stood perhaps a mile ahead of them, the most majestic silhouette against the stars Rock had ever seen. In the center of the giant columns, Cheops towered a good 500 feet into the air. They stood there, silently taking in its grandeur, lingering as the new day's sun began lightening the sky to the east, a violet, rippling color. Roxanne felt his breath quicken. The place was overwhelming, built on a scale as if the gods themselves were coming down to live and die there. Cheops looked so ancient, so eroded by time, yet so strong, still withstanding the elements.
Yes, I remember now.
What's that?
60 years ago, the southern Egyptians had taken this all over. I had to flee with my father back to the northern army, where he had friends. It has been a long, long time since I have been here.
At last, the wizened witch man turned his war bull around and led them down the dune to what looked like a wall of dark sand nearby.
Here. We will dig here.
Dig?
The elephants will do it, Roxen. Move the reins like this.
Ah, I see.
The three elephants dug at the wall for about 10 minutes. Suddenly, an opening appeared, and inside they could see a stone door, elaborately carved.
Yes, it is still here. My childhood memories do not deceive me. We go in through here. The tunnel leads the way beneath the dunes and over to the pyramid. We'd never get through the guards around there.
He had his elephant reach out with its massive trunk and wrap it around an immense circular brass handle that looked as bright as the day it had been put on. The immense stone doors, each one a single block the size of a truck, swung open on perfect stone ball bearings situated beneath them.
The ceiling will be too low for us to ride beneath. We will get off here.
Even then, the great beasts had to half kneel down as they made their way through the carved stone entrance into the square tunnel ahead. Each walked a yard in front of their war beasts, which followed on their tethers, looking around nervously. The air smelled dank, filled with death. Why not? Whatever was in here had been rotting and mildewed for eons. They had to move very slowly through the narrowing tunnel, the war bulls getting increasingly nervous. Suddenly, they were through into a larger chamber a good 100 feet on a side, a perfect square with high ceilings and small obelisks standing 10 feet apart all along the walls. The floor here was stone as well, big squares cut into 10 by 10 foot pieces and then set alongside one another with a perfect fit. Suddenly it dawned on Rock that he was seeing without sunlight, without torches. He glanced around and realized that it was the walls themselves. They were emitting a very faint greenish-blue light that appeared almost like early twilight to the eye. It was phosphorescent, like the water beneath the surface of a swamp, which can glow with the microscopic life below. But this glow was buried in the rock. It seemed to emanate from deep within, as if something had grown in the very walls. It gave enough light even after thousands of years, so they could clearly make out the major details of the place, and he could feel that the longer he was down there, the more his eyes were adjusting, allowing the dim light in.
We leave the war bulls here.
Rock and Rahala followed the witchman down one of a dozen smaller tunnel systems, which snaked out from every side of the vast stone chamber. Here, the greenish light was a little dimmer, but because it was narrower, they could see well enough. It was strange, seeing by the low and evened-out glow that came from the very rock walls. What secrets was the wizard priest leading them to? Rock wondered if Sesostris really knew this place, especially how to get back out. The tunnel grew narrower and narrower, until it was shrunken down to perhaps 4 feet high and not more than 36 inches wide. They moved in deeper, heading at a steeply downward angle. The air just grew thicker and thicker now, more like dust than air, as if the very oxygen were petrified. Then, with no warning, they turned a corner and were into another chamber. This one's green light brighter than the others by far. Bright as a shopping mall by comparison. Roxen could see every part of the chamber, and he could hardly believe his eyes. Mummies, golden coffins, statues of lions, of serpents, of giant scarab beetles forged out of gold and silver. Rock knew all the treasures of all the museums of the 20th century hadn't contained the glitter and wealth that lay before their mesmerized eyes.
What is all this?
It is the resting place of the truly great pharaohs. Your Colonel Kilhoff has taken the Goal power sticks from the level that is directly above this one. Perhaps 200 feet above. Far too thick a layer of stone for us to be found out wandering down here. This chamber is older than that which was thought to be the oldest by Egyptologists and historians. This was built at least 1,000 years before the First Dynasty. Built when men were giants and 100-foot serpents still roamed the earth. Egypt is the most ancient civilization, gentlemen. The beginning of recorded history dates back to 4241 BC, when our ancient ancestors created the first calendar. Tukyor, the Yellow Kingdom, had existed for 1,000 years before that, and the Scarab worshippers perhaps another 1,000 years before that. There is no culture more ancient than ours. None more connected to the secret mysteries of the beginning. These creatures, these lions with wings, jackals with human heads, the great scarabs which kept men as slaves, were once real. These are not myths, they are facts. This is how it truly once was in the very dawn of man's history. These statues depict real beings. Ha ha! There it is!
Those? In the glass bowl? They're so small.
Yes! That is what we came for. The Giza jar. And inside it, the 3 raw sticks. These are what was used to create the Great Pyramids. To lift their huge stones. It is these objects that we have come here for.
Roxen and Rahala both sighted the objects, sitting about 150 feet away, surrounded by what looked like 12 or so upright golden caskets with huge faces sculpted onto them, jeweled eyes staring out. The glowing green-blue sticks that sat upright in a bowl of clear crystals seemed to almost waver in the air, their appearance becoming sometimes indistinct, as if they were fading away into another dimension, and then snapping back into reality, so suddenly it seemed like the world itself jerked. They were filled with an electric life source that touched back to the birth of the planet, back to when forces beyond modern man's ken were at work. Roxen felt himself hypnotized by the items, wanting to reach for them, walk toward them, possess the raw sticks.
No! No! Do not move! I know they call to you. I know you can feel their power, but heed my words. Approach them wrongly, and you will die. Don't even look directly at them. There are special gloves here.
On a golden table nearby, Sesostris found gloves that looked as if they were woven from gold. They were shining and flawless.
These have to be put on to handle the raw sticks. These were designed to draw your soul. Only those pure of heart can resist. Those with base desires for the raw would touch or try to and die a most horrible death. For they can't be taken out of the crystal container unless in direct proximity to their opposites, their antithesis on a molecular level, the Kual sticks. Then the raw sticks will direct their energy toward the Kual, and the two combine and annihilate one another. It is better that the world not have any such things. They are the tools of the ancients. Mankind has done enough damage using them as weapons.
Amen to that.
We must take these and try to carry out our mission of total destruction of the Kual sticks, Roxen. Even if we die saving the planet Earth, the gods and demons, the netherworlds themselves, would honor us. Such an honor has not been bestowed on any mortal man since time immemorial.
With the rippling gold-seamed gloves on his hands, the High Priest reached forward and grasped hold of the crystal jar containing the raw sticks. Roxen watched the gloved hands close around it incredibly slowly and carefully. The container, which was vase-shaped but with subtle in and out curvations, was made of some kind of crystal that was seamed with networks of veins of a more shimmering ultra-blue. The whole thing looked somehow alive, as if it had to pump energy through those veins to withstand the pulsing green sticks inside to contain them. Rahala and Roxanne both held their breath as Sesostris lifted. As the crystal contained rose free of the table, both Roxanne and Rahala both half expected the universe to explode or a genie to appear, but nothing happened at all. Sesostris held the thing as if cradling a child and started walking slowly, retracing his steps back through the mummies, masks, and monster memorabilia of a long-gone era.
We must go slow. It cannot be covered in any way. Must always be allowed to breathe. You too will protect me. We must reach Kilov's storage place for the Kuan.
We're with you, pal, all the way.
Rock could imagine the pressure that Sesostris was under. The knowledge that you were holding the only thing separating Kilov from ultimate power was too damn much. Naturally, they got lost.
Sesostris, what if we...
No! We cannot turn back. The crystals may not be pleased.
What do you mean we can't turn back?
When we took the crystals, the defenses were activated. Anybody who takes the crystals should also know their way through the pyramid. If we take even a single step back, the defenses will be activated.
And what are those defenses?
The walls will shut.
The walls will shut? What do you mean?
It means instant meat patties.
Exactly. So, follow me, please. Forward.
They continued walking forward, making turns, never quite reaching a dead end. Sesostris continued to walk, seemingly having settled his nerves.
We will have to leave the elephants where they are.
Leave them? But what if...
There is not a way out that includes us meeting up with them. They will make their own way out once they get bored of waiting for us.
But won't the walls get them?
No. They will be left alone. They are but elephants. They would not have been able to take the raw sticks. Ah, here we are. We take these stairs.
Dead end.
So what can we do?
Sesostris?
No. We are fine. We are out.
What do you mean we're out? We're at a dead end.
For now. Watch.
The wizened priest moved forward a few yards, holding the raw jar out toward the wall as if he was offering it some food. Then a large section of the wall started to come out, and daylight flooded in. The stone that had fallen out to the sand was a good 8 feet in diameter, and they stepped through easily and out onto the desert. They were right at the base of the Great Pyramid.
Ho-ho. I gotta hand it to you, buddy. You really knew your way through the pyramid, didn't you?
A little. I have to admit, I am about as relieved as you that we got out.
So, now that we have the raw sticks, what do we do?
The war bulls should have gotten bored and left the pyramid by now. We must make our way back and...
Suddenly, there were nets being dropped over them, thick rope-woven cables that completely entangled Roxanne and Rahala before they could move a muscle. They fell to the ground and looked on in horror through the web at Colonel Kilov. The KGB nemesis was clad in a bizarre, overdone jewel and feather outfit. He walked up to Sesostris, his eyes lit with a drug-fueled fire.
Give it to me, my priestly friend.
No! Never! Besides, if you take this from me now, before it's been united with the Kuan, we'll all go up in fire!
That's where you're wrong. I have a way of controlling the power of the Rastics. As for you, your life means nothing to me. I have searched for a year to find those Rastics. Now that you have brought them to me, I will be invincible. Kill him!
Two men suddenly rushed forward before the aged priest could move an inch to defend himself.
No! Kilov, you fucking bastard!
I'll take those sticks now.
Kilov stepped forward, carrying a dark blanket of some kind. The weaving was made of a superfine material, almost like a spider's web. Using the blanket, he suddenly grabbed the crystal jar through an opening in the net.
No? Are you going to stop me?
Finish this man.
You sick bastards! That man was a high priest to thousands of people! A holy man!
Sick? Yes. But stupid? No.
Kilov placed the crystal inside the black material, closed it around the crystal container, and then tied it at the top with a knot of the same material that was braided together into a thicker twine.
The net of precious conthwebs. That's what keeps us all safe. Well, just me, not you, Tedaroxen. Not you, my most hated adversary. The man who gave me the scar on my cheek. You know, it really makes me feel so good just to have captured you, Tedaroxen, and to see you going through this total humiliation and defeat just when you thought the tides turned. It is just such an unparalleled thrill. All the pain and suffering that I have endured for the last few years, all of it suddenly seems worth it. But enough about me. Let's talk about these rustics. They are controlled once inside the Kampf web. It's modern technology, actually, not ancient. It's a coil of superconducting wires made of plastic. When a current is sent through the web, it creates a field which nothing can penetrate. Nothing can get through the tangled flow of currents. The rustics are blind in there. Blind as a man, with both his eyes plucked out. And they are at my disposal. So, Tedaroxen, I thank you for this wonderful new weapon. You see, if these rustics can neutralize the qual, there has got to be a way they can enhance them too. My scientists will soon discover how. And first, you shall both come with me.
The nets were gathered up, and Roxen and Rahala were dragged behind them. The desert hadn't seemed too bad from on top of the elephants. But down here, right on the ground, the heat was scalding, and the sand just got everywhere. They were dragged a full 5 minutes before they reached Kilov's camels.
Throw them aboard!
They were unceremoniously thrown on top like sacks of potatoes. These camels were about as half as big as the Aussies used. Also, these had three humps, creating a double row of seats up there between them. He was squeezed by the humps of a truly wretched-smelling animal, with his face pressed right into the hairy, sand-gritted hide. Sesostris was left behind, lying stone-cold dead in the sand, his royal blood tinting the desert in a ring around his body, oozing slowly out in every direction.
Thanks for trying, Sesostris. Hope you're in a better place now.
It took them 3 hours of solid riding to reach a whole series of small pyramids, with an immense one that seemed to reach for the sky in the center. The Great Pyramid of Giza, Kilov's headquarters. It was clearly the KGB lunatic's home base, for guards were everywhere, armed with conventional rifles and machine guns. Black uniformed elite guards, each with one of the qual sticks, stood at each of the sides of the pyramid, in emplacements high up that had been carved out of the very side of the pyramid. The doorway had been cut out a good 20 feet high. They didn't mess around out here. Roxen had to give them that.
We're here. Get them off the camels.
Oh, that is just so much fun to watch.
Carry them.
They were carried into a religious assembly chamber with huge carvings of dogs and hawks. The place where Kilov led the priests of Amun in their daily rituals, keeping firm control over them all. Two wide stone tables coated in purplish dried slime were in the center of the circular room, which was 40 feet in diameter. An arched ceiling rose up some 30 feet above.
Strap them to the stones!
Roxen and Rahala were carried to the slime tables and then tied down.
Are they securely bound, Akatakal?
They are, my lord.
Excellent. Cut the nets from them.
As Kilov's servant dutifully sliced him out of the net, Rock tested his new bonds. Steel wire attached to bronze ringlets.
Try to break your bonds, Rock. But they are unbreakable.
Oh, it gives me such pleasure to see you struggling like this. Like animals caught in a trap. And soon I shall hear you scream as well. Music for my ears. In fact, I shall have the whole event recorded. Video and audio, so I can have a permanent record of the torture and death of Ted Ruxin and Rwanda Rachala. You two have fucked me for the last time. Here it is now.
Men brought video equipment in and set up two cameras with stereo mics at each end of the two sacrificial altars. Within minutes, the equipment was turned on. Torches placed in stone holders around the room, so it was lit up with a flaring brilliance. Rock looked around, trying to see if there was any way in hell to get free. The dozen priests, with gold vestments over their shoulders and long dark red robes hanging to the hard floor, looked at him with infinite coldness and not a trace of mercy.
Now, Ruxin, there's nothing I want from you other than to see you die. No information, nothing. So there's nothing you can do to stop me. No enticements. And all that will add to my pleasure. For you too, no, there's no way out.
Kilov hefted a glowing red qual in his hand and pointed it at one of several slabs resting on their sides against one wall. Then the piece rose right up, as light as a feather, and started drifting across the room until it was hovering over Ruxin. Rock looked up and gulped. It was the exact size of the slab he was on, about 6 by 10, and looked to be about 6 feet thick.
I'm sure you're thinking, I'm going to crush you. But I'm not. I'm not. Well, at least I won't right away. You know what amazes me most about these qual anti-gravity devices? Orbital. What would I do without your glorious leveling of moods? Your unparalleled ability to keep my focus. Yes, yes. Their precision.
Ruxin.
Huh?
Courage, friend. Courage. The gods will look highly upon you.
Even as he spoke, one of the Amun priests appeared at the end of his table and, using a second qual power stick, lifted a piece of rock as big as, if not bigger, than Roxon's. In a flash, it was over Rahala's body, hanging there like a blimp ready to run out of gas.
I heard what you said, Rahala. Yes, I'm sure the gods will welcome you, won't they? And don't worry. Whichever false gods you all believe in, they'll certainly have you soon. But not so easily, or in one piece. As I was saying, Ruxin, what amazes me most about these qual is the precision with which one can operate them once you become adept, as I have. They're like scalpels. They can be focused in so many ways. For example, although that is at least 10 tons of rock above you, I can lower it at a very slow speed.
He started bringing it down, but fractions of an inch at a time.
Or I can move it fast.
Suddenly, the slab was dropping right on him, coming down like a meteor from hell. Rock's eyes snapped shut involuntarily, not wanting to see the end.
No! You can open your eyes now, Ruxin. I'm sorry to say that you're still alive.
Ruxin snapped his eyes open and was looking up at the slab, centimeters from his nose.
And then you can stop it again anywhere. Isn't it amazing? I'm going to crush you, Ruxin, slowly, very slowly. You will feel every bone in your body snap. Shall feel the very cells of your flesh exploded before I am done with you. Feel your eyeballs pop from your head like rotten fruits.
Kilov turned his hand just slightly, the red beam cloaking the entire slab with a crackling, almost invisible sheen of red electricity starting to move again. Rock could feel it coming down agonizingly slow. He turned his head sideways and had to pull in his chest. He winced. It hurt already as it squashed his ear against the side of his skull. And then the skull began compressing slightly as the death slab dropped down another 20th of an inch in a minute. Keyloff was right. Roxanne could see that already. This death was going to hurt. A lot. The pain was unbearable. Something of a new order for Roxanne, who had experienced the gamut of unpleasurable sensations. Rock could hear the sound of his own chest bones and the side of his head starting to make a very faint crunching sound.
Stop!
Then, even as he waited to start crackling like Humpty Dumpty up on the sacrificial wall, the slab stopped in its tracks. His right ear felt about as flat as a piece of American cheese. Rock somehow managed to turn his eyes all the way down toward the bottom of the narrow space and looked between the slab he was lying on and the one that was pressing down from above. A black-garbed figure had his hand around the front of Keyloff's throat.
Now, you're going to raise that slab up, Colonel. This goes to all of your lackeys, too. No one here wants to try anything. Or there's one dead KGB slime, and I mean pronto. I'll slice his throat from ear to ear if one of you makes the slightest move.
It was Chen. Rock would have yelled out, smiled, waved, even cried. But he couldn't do anything at all under that damn slab.
You, Priesty, the other one with the stick, move that rock.
Chen pulled the blade tighter against Keyloff's neck so that a thin line of blood appeared where it was touching. The colonel's eyes were popping, wide as 100-ruble pieces, as he held the qual out in his hand, trying not to make it jerk or waver, as he suddenly realized that his life depended on the state of Roxanne's health. His hand suddenly shook slightly from side to side as a fear-inducing drug tremor swept along his arm. But then, it was rising. Rock could hardly dare believe it. He was sure he'd bought it this time. He'd already been preparing for how he'd present himself to God. But the slab kept rising up above him, like a balloon, climbing easily up into the air. The most beautiful sight he'd ever seen. When it was about 6 feet up, Chen turned Keyloff hard, launching the immense stone towards the wall.
Good. Now tell your lackey to do the same.
And then what?
Then you live, I swear.
The colonel somehow believed the words. He could tell if men were lying. It was one of his abilities, his secret tricks. Such a skill had enabled him to take out threats to his power long before they had a chance to strike. Preemptive termination was his rule, but not this time.
Do it! Put away the slab!
The immense slab rose from Ahala and moved to the side, and then came down fast. At that moment, Keyloff suddenly threw up his arms, grabbing the knife with both hands. Keyloff managed to rip the knife away from his neck, but he cut his left hand severely in the process. But Keyloff managed to suddenly duck down and rush through the dusty sacrifice chamber. Like a rat, he disappeared behind a low stone sculpture, and in the flash of an eye, was gone.
Son of a bitch!
Chen! We're okay!
As Chen ran towards Rock, three of the priests pulled long straight swords from beneath their priestly garb and started toward him to cut him off.
Did you find the keys?
No time. I'll use some quick charge.
Roxanne turned his head as Chen raced around the ritual slab, slapping little pieces of what looked like bubblegum on the 4 half-inch thick ringlets that held his wrists and ankles. The ringlets were locked somehow, and they were anchored right into the rock itself, so they had to be blasted. Chen raced around Rahala's table as well, slapping the quick charge in place. He was at the third ringlet when Rock's mini charges went off. Little puffs of black smoke came from the now busted locks. Roxanne sat up fast, rubbing his definitely warmed up ankles and wrists. He had barely gotten himself swung around on the table when two more of Keyloff's priests rushed at him. Roxanne threw himself backwards straight over the table as the swords dug into the stone just where his back had been a second before. He rolled off the other side without stopping and came down standing. He had just hit the ground when Rahala's charges went off behind him. Rahala was up in a flash and rolled off the table to be next to Rux. Chen joined them, leaping over the table like a black gazelle.
You crazy bastard! How the hell did...
Eat a rock! Here!
Shen handed them each a fully loaded 25-shot Liberator 9mm auto pistol he produced from under the black silk ninja gear. Shen raised his head fast from behind the table, where the three of them were crouched as a few more sand devils made their move. He let loose with four of the shurikens. These didn't explode. They didn't have to.
Kilo's already up here. We gotta move. I think he'll take out this whole pyramid. I'm sure he has it set with charges. I'll take the lead.
Move! And thanks!
But Chen was already up and right over the top of the closest slab table, like a panther on the run. Rock and Rahala followed right behind, so the three of them formed a sort of phalanx. They smashed out with punches and elbows and let loose with their respective weapons, taking out anything that moved toward them. And a lot did move, as the whole room became a tornado of flashing swords and a few glowing red quell sticks as the priests tried to get a bead on the swift-weaving bodies. Suddenly, Chen was rising up in the air, enveloped in the sparkling red electromagnetic beam from the quell. Within an instant, he was up 20 feet, heading to a smashing visit to the stone arch ceiling. But Rock saw the man smile and got a bead. Chen dropped straight down. For most men, a 20-foot fall would have meant rather serious injury, broken bones at the least. But the Chinese free fighter dropped like a cat, spinning around in the air, so he came down feet first. Then he was up alongside them again in a flash. Not even fazed by the air ride, ripping two more of the shuriken out from under his black garb, one in each hand. He charged out of the room through an arched doorway that led to tunnels. A single guard tried to chop down at Rahala with his broadsword. The African prince deftly avoided the blade and came back swinging. He wasn't in the mood to be trifled with today. Chen led them at a full run down the tunnel. They could hear noises all around them, men running down other tunnel systems. They tore ass as if there was no tomorrow. A group of five Amun guards charged out of one of the side tunnels, scimitar swords descending. Rahala was ready for them. The escapees shot up an angled walkway, and then suddenly could see sunlight ahead.